Agriculture is South Dakota's largest industry, and for the farmers who work the land and tend to the herd, it's more than a job, it's a way of life. It's hard to overstate the value of ag in South Dakota, but during Governor Noem's December 8th budget address, she made it clear that producers and rural communities that support the ag industry need to be prepared for the future. During her address, she recommended the legislature invest in measures to help ensure the industry does well, including an investment of $100 million toward a broadband expansion that would fully connect the state at last.
We must create an environment where people aren't forced to choose between the modern economy on one hand and life in their hometown on the other. We must make sure that our people can harness the latest technology to take advantage of what has become the modern equivalent of a post road.
Rural connectivity isn't just for ag, of course, but the governor pointed out how important it can be for producers' success.
The benefits of this investment is hard to overstate. It makes it easier for our farmers and our ranchers to communicate with their suppliers, to access weather forecasts, to participate in online marketing and auctions.
Keeping up with advancements in technology wasn't the only thing she suggested agriculture producers should be concerned about.
I expect the road could be a little bit rough under the Biden administration with some of the policies that they've embraced. We can expect that they may try to raise taxes. They have said that. Similarly, we can expect that they will try and eliminate fossil fuels by passing the Green New Deal. And whatever else the administration might do, it would certainly give us a lot more regulation. I expect that federal agencies will see South Dakota not necessarily as a partner, but as a subordinate based on what they have already communicated with us. So we are preparing for that.
Rhetoric of uncertainty about the future isn't new to South Dakota farmers. They're always facing uncertainty. As it stands now, many South Dakota farmers are experiencing moderate to severe drought. But Governor Noem does bring up an interesting question. What does an administrative change in the White House mean for this state's producers? Joining us to share thoughts on what a Biden administration might mean for South Dakota farmers was Kevin McNew, chief economist with the Farmers Business Network. How much of a difference does it make when America shifts to a new presidential administration? Is it a big change? Is it smaller changes? What is the general rule for that?
Yeah, I think in general, Lori, you know, farmers are pretty immune to overall changes in the White House and who's kind of controlling the levers. You know, there's some pretty fundamental differences between what President Trump did and what President-elect Biden has signaled he will do. And so I think there are some reasonable expectations that there'll be differences going forward. Some of them I think are very positive for farmers. I think there's some new changes, especially as it relates to climate and the role that the USDA may play in helping subsidize sustainable ag practices.
You know, for farmers who, you know, remember certain things from the Obama administration, is it going to be more like we're going back to that, or is it forward to something entirely different with Joe Biden?
I think it's forward, and this is my own conjecture, Lori. But, you know, he signaled pretty clearly that climate change is a big priority of his. Obviously, COVID is first and foremost, and his response to COVID will be first and foremost. But I think a second order effect will be what he does around climate change. And he signaled a couple of things that are important for agriculture. One, he views agriculture as a partner around this, specifically, that farmers have the ability through production practices to sequester carbon and kind of change the climate calculus, if you will. And so I do think, the new administration will likely put in play some new policies that encourage cover crops and different practices that sequester carbon. And what those will be yet, we don't know, but he certainly signaled that in his election run. So I think that's probably first and foremost what we can expect from a Biden administration as it relates to climate. You know, the market has already started to begun doing these types of incentive structures as it is. You know, at Farmers Business Network, we have a very active regenerative ag program where we do work with private companies to adopt sustainable practices. And so there's markets in place where farmers are paid to take on certain production practices. So it's not something brand new. Many farmers are already participating or they're aware of it. So I think it's just going to be a question of what will the Biden administration put in play to further accelerate that adoption. And so, like you said, yet to be defined. But, you know, in many cases, farmers are already doing some of these practices. They know the benefits of cover crops. They know the benefits of no-till. And so I think it's just going to be a question of what will the Biden administration put forward.
All right. So how will a Biden administration deal with China as in a way that's different than the Trump administration? What can we anticipate there?
Right. I think in some sense, what might surprise our listeners here is that, Trump and Biden are not too philosophically different around what they view as China's problems. And that is intellectual property transfer and also, the subsidizing of their private companies for production. And so, Biden is very much a pro-labor guy. So he doesn't like the Chinese practices. I think where the difference lies between the two administrations is how they will choose to deal with that. Biden, I think, is more of a coalition type of builder. He'll resort and rely on WTO and other organizations that are more multilateral in nature. And so I don't see him going head-to-head with China. I think he will probably hold tough on China, but I don't think we're going to have a repeat of trade wars. And so I don't think it's something that farmers have to worry about at this juncture.
And when we talk about, the opportunity to export and the demand for exports and then also the call for regenerative practices, do they conflict or do they work hand in hand?
Yeah, I think the regenerative ag practices can be done as kind of a second order effect. I think what we've seen from an agronomic standpoint, and this is where the scientists, both in the public and private sector, have really tried to be, looking into this issue, is you're not necessarily having to give up huge amounts of yield to take on these regenerative ag practices like cover crops. Cover crops provide an agronomic benefit by rebuilding soil content. And so I think we don't have to trade off one for the other so dramatically. It's not to say there wouldn't be some minor trade-offs, but I think we can meet both goals pretty succinctly in agriculture. So I think that's what gives me a lot of optimism is I think there'll be a clearer vision around climate change and how agriculture can be a player in that. And also I think we have this huge runway in front of us with China as a wide open market for us to feasibly export into and really see the benefits of that in rural America.
So despite Noam's suggestion that Biden will negatively impact South Dakota producers, the folks we talked with suggested the track we're on today won't look all that different after the inauguration. In fact, it might be improved. Doug Somke is president of the South Dakota Farmers Union, and as you'll hear, he generally agrees with Kevin and even suggests there are some new areas for producers to be optimistic about. All right, so I want to talk about what a potential Biden administration might mean in South Dakota, what some of the things you're looking for. But first, I was wondering if you could speak more broadly to the idea of, grassroots policy versus responding to what happens in Washington. How do those things kind of balance themselves out?
Well, that is a really good question. With today's method of technology and communications, so many times we do get lost in the whole volume of the communicating, and we bring the big world point issues or the national point issues home to roost. And when in reality, we really need to be concentrating more on what is affecting us at our farm and ranch or at our local business or in our own community and school or whatever. So many times we get, like I said, we just get wrapped up in that big topic and don't concentrate on what is really happening at home. And that's one good thing about our policy committee meetings. We do talk about all those aspects, but And again, being grassroots, it all comes from the members first, and then we discuss it at our level at the state, and then move it on to the national.
Yeah. What is happening at home? What are you hearing from your members?
Well, a lot of things. Right now, one of the big things is the lack of being able to get into your FSA office to do year-end reporting. A number of farmers today, especially crop farmers, have reports that they need to get signed that for the crops that they raised. Most of the time, a good crop insurance agent will do that for you. Make sure that you're filed and that your information is received so that the next year that it will go into your running average. But sometimes that doesn't happen. And with the FSA is being closed, it makes it a lot harder to make sure that your information didn't slide off the pile. And we're hearing some of that. So we've been reaching out to Senator Thune, asking that we make sure that these people that may have find out they missed the cutoff date or the sign-up date, for instance, like PLC, that they be allowed to, refile. Because this is happening not just here in South Dakota, but it's happening across the country. And I'm going to just guess that just it's not just the PLC sign-ups. I'm going to guess there's other qualification deadlines that they have to be missed as well. So this is something, again, you know, that we have to make sure that we address. And again, it's not a blame on any county or state or administration. It's just the fact of the matter that it's hard to do some of this virtually when you're not used to doing it.
3 years left on the Farm Bill, and then also this huge political change in Washington, D.C., as we look to a Biden administration and the departure of President Trump. And how much of an impact do you think that might have, and in what areas? Where do you want to begin with that conversation, Doug?
Well, you know, I know there's a lot of anxiety about the change of this administration compared to the prior one. Worrying about, oh my goodness, you know, the tree huggers and the environmentalists are going to take over. You just got to remember that this administration can only do so much that way. I mean, there's executive orders, of course, but you still got to go through Congress. And right now, the Senate still is, run by the majority of the other party. And so I think there's going to be, again, some moderate appointments. And then and to this point, I would say that the appointments that I've seen mentioned already, I haven't seen anything that has been anything that should be a real detriment or a real concern. But I can also tell you that our organization has had a lot of major input, not only from our state working through the connections that we have, but also through the National Farmers Union organization. I'm concerned, but I'm not alarmed, and I'm confident that we will see a administration that is going to have a lot more, again, as I said before, humanity and less dictatorship.
I want to talk to you about Amendment A before we let you go, and the industrial hemp potential. There's obviously a court challenge to Amendment A. What are some of your members saying about how they feel about Amendment A and industrial hemp, and their concerns or their optimism? You know, what are you hearing?
Well, I'm hearing a lot of jokes, of course. You know, I mean, the fact that they weren't able to grow a hemp, but by golly, all of a sudden we can go right into medical or recreational marijuana. This might be the one thing that saves their farm. I mean, there's a lot of that kind of, jest about it. But the fact of the matter is, if you look around the country in states like Colorado, where this thing is already, taken advantage of, I just think there's a lot of things that we have to have an open mind at looking here. The voters definitely spoke. I mean, it was quite loudly what they see they want for this state. And I think there are farmers that are, willing to adjust and do what they can to be part of that business. Now, is it going to work for everybody? No, That's not what we see. But as far as the hemp industry, I do see. I mean, we're working with some companies in Montana because they're ahead of us as far as the hemp production to develop their businesses and models that would be cooperatively good for the community, good for the producers, and also for the end users, the consumers. There's a whole new area that we can service, for instance, for livestock bedding. I look at the dairies in the state of South Dakota, and some of, you know, there's more and more of these big 9,000 dairies going up, especially along the I-29 corridor, and that, you know, they're going to need a lot of different materials to support that industry, including bedding. I know straw has always been a mainstay for farmers and livestock. I mean, that's what we use on our farm. But I'm just saying that if you're going to have that number of cattle, you're going to have a lot of manure, and you're going to want something that will be biodegradable in a very short amount of time. And the herd product that comes from the hemp is a great product that does biodegrade and basically improves the soil along with the manure. I mean, the bugs love it that are feeding on this product and improving the soil health. So, I mean, it's something that we really need to take a hard, long look at, and that's already happening in other states. So we in South Dakota should get ready and do the best we can to capitalize and help the industry and the state as a whole.
Doug, I know this is a little speculation, so if you just have no idea, just say, I have no idea. But do you think that the resistance of the governor and the challenges to get industrial hemp going in the last legislative session helped the overall push toward legalizing industrial hemp, medical, and recreational marijuana from the voters? Do you think that that had a thumb on the scale at all?
You know, I don't know about that, but I do know this. There is definitely a disconnect between what the governor is thinking and what the voters are thinking. I'm not trying to pin blame anywhere, one place or another, but, you know, we elected the governor to govern and to serve. Please listen to what the voters have said, not only the voters that voted for you, but also the body as a whole.
As we said before, uncertainty is old news for South Dakota farmers. Recently, the South Dakota Department of Ag and the Department of Environment and Natural Resources merged, and producers had a lot of questions. Governor Noem named Hunter Roberts as the department's new leader, and we checked in with him to see how the merger is progressing and what the appointment of former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack as Secretary of Ag for President-elect Joe Biden's administration means for the state. I feel we should start with the budget address yesterday and some key points that impact ag that Governor Noem proposed, including a $100 million investment to fully connect the state via broadband over the next few years. Can you talk about that kind of investment and the impact it might have on farmers and producers and the ag industry overall in the state?
Yeah, I was very excited to learn about Governor Noem's investment in internet across the state. I think, it's very consistent with what she's touted from the beginning, and we've already seen a lot of benefits from hooking up a lot of the rural parts of the states. This isn't just an ag benefit. It's certainly a lot of other people across the state, but from the ag perspective, this is a huge thing. You look at connecting people and keeping our producers informed with minute-to-minute and higher quality internet service is going to make a big difference in the way they do business and just make it easier for them to do business instead of looking at other wireless type options or other opportunities. So it's definitely an exciting time, and it really, that big investment is really going to accelerate that build out in South Dakota and help us better capture market opportunities in the future.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about how the merger of these departments and how it is progressing. It's fairly new, and you're making this change during a very difficult time, which is pretty much the whole year of 2020. But tell us a little bit about the merger, please, and how it's progressing.
Great. Thanks, Lori. Well, Governor Noem announced the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Environmental Resources merger in late August. I became the Interim Secretary of Department of Ag in September 9th. I'm also the Secretary of the Department of Environmental Resources, so it was a pretty good fit. Conveniently, we're in the same headquarters for both shops, are in the same building and pier, so that's been nice. We've been working really hard to find synergies in building the organizational structure of the new agency. How do these parts fit together? Kind of to backtrack a little bit, early on in Governor Noem's term, she moved the agriculture business development activities from the Department of Ag to the Governor's Office of Economic Development. With that move, it really changed the perceived conflict that what the business development team at Department of Agriculture did was they provided direct incentives. They recruited ag businesses to the state. The Department of Agriculture doesn't do that anymore. The Department of Agriculture is a little bit more regulatory in nature and services part of agriculture related, not as much on the business development. Certainly, we advocate for agriculture, and we're certainly going to play a bigger role in federal policy as much as we can, but that's not, because that business development team moved over there, we think it makes the two agencies mesh a lot better. In South Dakota, agriculture, conservation, natural resource protection go hand in hand. Agriculture is the biggest economic driver in this state, so it only makes sense to regulate these industries under one department. Department of Agriculture and Department of Environment and Natural Resources programs and responsibilities still remain in place moving forward. There will be some changes in services, but we'll continue to do our jobs and implement our programs as we have in the past. So we're still going to follow the rules and the laws that are out there in place to, make sure that we have safe food and we're protecting the environment. Looking at some of the advantages and synergies that we're creating, we're taking advantage of having our agriculture and environmental experts under one roof to create a one-stop shop for all ag and environmental needs. An example would be merging the Department of Environment and Natural Resources Watershed Protection Program into the Department of Agriculture's Resource Conservation and Forestry Division. These programs already work together, have similar conservation goals, and overlapping partnerships, so it only makes sense to combine these programs into a single division to implement on-the-ground conservation practices. Another example we have is portions of the South Dakota Department of Ag Services Division with programs of Department of Environmental Natural Resources Environmental Services Division. Combining them, this move allows us to take advantage of cross-trained inspectors across the state and streamline the regulatory oversight of ag chemical spills and releases. One last example would be we're creating a livestock services program. This group will manage all things livestock related, including capo permitting, inspections, manure management planning, and dairy and egg licensing. So those parts of both of that regulatory oversight on livestock come from both agencies.
I just want to jump in because you mentioned, influence on federal policies, and I did want to ask you before we run short of time. Former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack has just been identified as Secretary of Ag for President-elect Joe Biden's administration. Now, in the past, he's been a supporter of ethanol and biofuels. What does this announcement mean for South Dakota? How is it being received by your department? What do you think?
Well, Secretary Vilsack has a proven track record of working across party lines. Certainly being in the upper Midwest, he understands our issues. He's a proven commodity, so I think that's a good pick from the Biden administration. Look forward to working with Secretary Vilsack when he comes to light. He's definitely been okay to work with. I've certainly, from the department's perspective and my personal perspective, working with him on biofuels has been great. He's been a great advocate for ethanol and other biofuels. Ethanol is a big part of the way we utilize our corn in South Dakota. So that's definitely great news. And look forward to working with him.
So under a Biden administration, there are a few key areas to keep an eye on, including trade policy and environmental incentives and regulations. Soil carbon storage incentives and biofuel support are topics to watch. Immigration policy impacts farm labor and the food production chain. Access to markets, as always, must improve. But without a Democratic-controlled Senate, sweeping changes on issues such as the environment, trade, or immigration most likely won't be all that drastic. The political noise might remain high, but South Dakota farmers and producers will keep doing what they always do, right here at home, to care for the land and to feed the world, regardless of who is leading the nation.